Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Dr. Nicholas Crisp joins us this morning. We wanted to check in with him and understand where we're going and where he thinks we should be going in terms of mask mandates, in terms of the state of a disaster. Dr. Nicholas Crisp, first of all, we haven't spoken this year, so all the best for 2022. How are you doing?
Hi, Howard, and hello to the listeners. Yeah, fine. Thanks very much. Nice to be in the new year after a very, very difficult year last year.
Absolutely. And there's definitely a sense of renewed optimism, isn't there?
Yeah, I think Omicron turning out the way it did was a serious relief for us. Imagine if it had been like Delta, we would have been in serious, serious trouble.
Incredible. Absolutely. Do you see, I know the World Health Organizations are almost sort of calling the end of the end of the pandemic later this year. Do you share that optimism?
Well, Howard, I'm normally an optimist and I really do see the glass half full, but I've also learned with COVID that you get sideswiped all the time and you must expect anything. So the last thing we should do now is let our guard down, because we may well be almost at the finish line, but we may be getting into the next stage of the relay race. So I think right now what we need to do is consolidate what we know works, enjoy the reprieve while we have it, but be ready for the next wave. It will come. It may just be similar to Omicron and transmit widely, but not be as aggressive, but it could be a mutation that is more aggressive and doesn't transmit. So I think the trick for now is to make sure that we get as many people vaccinated as possible so that we have the highest possible immunity in the community for anything that Omicron, that COVID throws at us.
So in other words, the focus most definitely has to be getting people vaccinated. It's just got to be. That's really as simple as that.
Yeah.
Is there, I know that we've spoken, and certainly in many of the conversations that I've had, the concern about not mixing vaccines. Do you see that changing sometime soon?
Yeah, I think that we've learned a lot during the course of last year. And when you're dealing with something completely new, you go about it very cautiously. You observe what is happening where other people are doing things as well around the world. You gather the evidence and then you assess whether you're dealing with something that is safe and effective. It's not just about safety. It's also about not pouring money down a hole. We don't have a lot of spare money to do things that aren't effective. So we've spent a lot of time, and we don't want to do any more damage to either the health system or the economy. And we don't want to be spending unnecessary money on vaccines. So I think we have understood now which heterologous boosters are fine and how they work. We're now working to get that all registered so that we have the proper statutory framework to do all the things that we need to do. We've been taking stock of the measures that are in place, and I think we agree with the bulk of the commentators who are saying we can start to let go of some of the measures. And that will all come together now in the next couple of weeks.
That is very, very good news. I know that's been one of the conversations that people have been raising with us. The other one, of course, being the quarantine period, because there was this quite courageous and brave step taken earlier on sometime in December, and then it was pulled back. Do we see that changing again?
Yeah, so what happened there was that we ran a bit ahead of our own game and published the circular, which was in conflict with an existing regulation, and that then just created confusion. So that's why the circular was withdrawn, but the intention is still there. In the meantime, the various committees that do take these decisions and prepare the regulations and make the amendments have met. My understanding is that process is now with the legal drafters, and as soon as they are done, then it will be published. So I'm pretty sure we will move to a far more relaxed quarantine and isolation environment, still very responsible, but not the very, very drastic measures that we've had up to now.
Yeah, you know, what was interesting was I had my own personal experience. I hadn't, thankfully, had COVID at all. We've been extremely cautious. And, of course, at the end of it, at the tail end of it, my wife and I caught Omicron. and in fact, we were quite ill. It wasn't a joke. I didn't think, people speak about it as though it's nothing. It certainly wasn't nothing in our experience, and we obviously are vaccinated. But the what was difficult was that quarantine period, and if we as a couple didn't make a concerted decision to say, right, we've tested, we are going to tell people, we are going to do this quarantine period because it's the law, I could see very easily with my daughter, let's say, starting matric, and, you know, that people wouldn't adhere to it. It could easily not be adhered to because it's so stringent. And that to me was a worry when we went through that. It bothered me that it was almost too difficult to do and a big ask.
Well, I mean, you're right. I'm sure nobody's going to differ with you. I think most of us have experienced family members or friends who have had COVID in one or other of the waves by now. In a way, that's not such a bad thing as long as we've kept you out of hospital and kept you from being very ill. So I'm glad to hear that you and your wife are fine. That's the objective with vaccination. It's not to totally prevent all illness. We get exposed to viruses and bacteria all the time, every day, and our immune systems fight it off because we've been exposed to them before. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to provide a vaccine which stimulates your body's immune response so that when you get the real thing and you're exposed to a more aggressive strain of it, your body immediately mounts a response and you get a mild infection, you feel lousy for a day or two and it passes. Mm. So we have now understood much more about how that works. It's not just an antibody response. It's also about the way our T cells and the rest of our immune response works and how long it's sustained. So we're now very, very clear that if we vaccinate, and we vaccinate everybody, as many as we possibly can get hold of, then we do have sufficient immune stimulation in our bodies to make sure that when we get a serious exposure and to a more serious strain, we're able to fight through if we don't end up in hospital and dying. That's what we want.
Absolutely. And all the doctors and physicians we've spoken to have said the same thing, that this is how it really should be. You get sick, you stay home, but you're not putting strain on the system. You're not in danger of dying. Certainly what I felt more than anything was a lack of anxiety, you know, that we knew with reasonable confidence we'd be fine. And I think that also made an enormous, enormous difference. Has there been any discussion around reducing the age in terms of our care?
Yeah, there has. Just before I answer that, I want to be clear that Omicron, even as the sort of least aggressive of the strains we've had, still kills people. And I think people need to understand that just because it's on average less aggressive than what we've seen before, doesn't mean it's not able to kill people. So please, people must take the necessary precautions.
Absolutely.
As far as children are concerned, at the moment the vaccines are registered from 12 and up. But around the world, it has been dropped to 5. We are in the process of getting a vaccine registered. As far as I know, there is now an application with SAHPRA. It may even have been approved in the past week or so. We will take stock on whether to include that age group, whether there's sufficient evidence at this stage to include that age group to get the kind of response we want. What we really want now is to protect young adults. We know they did get sick during this last wave. We know that they are less vulnerable than old people, but they're not invulnerable. It's not as if they're not going to get it, and it's not as if young people can't die from a COVID exposure. It is still a risk. So we would really like to see young people protecting themselves. They're a vital part of their family, so if they get sick, then they're often not able to fend for their families and so on. Old people have done well. We started a long time ago, and we've had a lot of opportunity to work with older people. So their vaccination coverage is generally across the country pretty good. But the younger people really need to protect themselves. They are the heart and soul of the economy. They are the people we're going to rely on to look after us into the next generation. And we really don't want young people getting sick now.
Absolutely right. It's fascinating in terms of, just before you joined us, I was telling our listeners about a case in Boston where a hospital refused to give a heart transplant to somebody who refused to be vaccinated. And I'm not asking the policy on that, in terms of your own thoughts on it. That's not where I'm going. But it is a very, very difficult situation that we're going to start to see more of, in businesses, in schools, in hospitals, across the country. How do you see this playing out?
Yeah, look, it's tough when you're working in the health profession and when you're a doctor and when you're an administrator with scarce resources and so on. There's always rationing in health services. Even in our system, there's rationing on who qualifies for kidney transplants and who qualifies for other things. And there are various criteria associated with them. So I did read that report. Frankly, I'm not surprised. It's going to attract a lot of attention. And I'm not sure how it will pan out in the end, but rationing is a reality. And if one is a risk, you must expect that your risk is going to be weighted in some way. Everybody who smokes has their insurance risk rated. People in certain age brackets get their motor vehicle insurance rated in a different way. So people who have not vaccinated and are at greater risk are likely to get penalized in some way as well. And, it's going to be, this is new, so it's going to take time to settle down and for people who do these calculations to work out how they want to do it. And unfortunately, it is going to impact on the way healthcare is rationed to people.
And it kind of makes sense that it does. If you're a smoker and you want a heart transplant, I would imagine it impacts. If you are an alcoholic who wants a liver transplant, it's got to make a difference. I'm not comparing alcoholics to people who don't vaccinate because otherwise they will lynch me, even though I am tempted to do that. But that isn't quite the point. These are the difficult questions that are going to have to be answered. Dr. Nicholas Crisp, thank you as always for chatting to us, making yourself available, and for bringing us the latest thinking. Also, thank you for all the incredible work that you do.